up and battered around. Been sent up and I've been shot down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care.
And Jeff was just so blissed out, you know, being able to produce Roy. And then the idea of being in the group with Roy. And, you know, and me, I loved Roy. I worked with him back in the 60s and, you know, loved all his records and his singing. And I'm, you know, just so into Bob too. You know, I just loved so much of Bob's songs and his whole attitude. You know, that I was looking at it from, like, out of the Wilburys. I was looking at it like, wow, look at all these people together. This would be great.
Well, it's all.
And I think George and Jeff had, for a long time during the Cloud Nine album, it had been kind of a private joke with them, the Traveling Wilburys, that one day they'd have a group called the Traveling Wilburys. This is Charlie T. Wilbury Jr. of the Traveling Wilburys.
Hello there, this is Nelson Wilbury of the Traveling Wilburys in the studio for Volume 1.
Each night on the sold-out Jeff Lynne ELO concert tour, one of the biggest crowd roars comes when Lynne performs a song from his other band, the Traveling Wilburys, and flashes brief, melancholy glimpses of the time 30 years ago when rock's ultimate dream team convened at a barbecue attended by Lynne, George Harrison, Tom Petty, and Bob Dylan, with Roy Orbison soon to follow. Handle with care. Last Night, Not Alone Anymore, Tweeter and the Monkey Man, and the prescient End of the Line are all included today as the late George Harrison and the late Tom Petty archival interviews here in the studio tell how the stars aligned 3 decades ago to give us a band with 5 rhythm guitar players. And all because Tom Petty had a hankering to play baseball on Thanksgiving Day and needed to find a store open that sold baseball gloves on Thanksgiving Day. And that's how it all started. George Harrison had just teamed with former Electric Light Orchestra musician-producer Jeff Lynne for Harrison's critical and commercial comeback, 1987's Cloud Nine album. Meanwhile, Bob Dylan had reinvented himself for a whole new generation by enlisting Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers as Dylan's backup tour band. That combination had been so successful in the States that they took it to England in the fall of 87, where Tom Petty picks up the story with me in the studio.
We'd have to go back even further to September before I saw you. No, it wasn't September. It was October. It was on my birthday, really, right around there, around October the 20th or something. We were finishing a tour with Bob Dylan, and we were over in England, and we were in London for, I can't remember, 4 or 5 days. And George and Jeff came, I think, first in Birmingham, and then they started coming to the shows in London and just coming and visiting and hanging out. And we all got along real well. We just had a wonderful time hanging out, you know. And we even got George to play a little bit one night. And we just had a great time. And so then we all said goodbye, and the tour ended, and I came back to Los Angeles. And when I had left there, George had given me his Cloud Nine album. It was just about to come out, and he had given me a cassette of it. And I came home, and I put it on, and I thought, man, this is amazing. You know, I just, the sound and songs and everything, I just thought, Lord, this really sounds good and sounds, you know, original and different. And I said, man, that Jeff Lynne just blows my mind, because I had always been a fan of Jeff's. So anyway, I was playing it all day Thanksgiving Day. We had some people over and we were playing it. And then I decided I wanted some baseball mitts and just got the urge to play baseball.
That makes sense to me. You know, it was Thanksgiving Day.
And I thought, where can I get baseball mitts on Thanksgiving Day? And I thought, like Thrifty Drugs, they'll have baseball mitts. And I got in the car and I went driving down the road to get some baseball mitts. And
make a note of that.
And I stopped at the red light and looked over to my left, and there's Jeff Lynne in the next car. So I was so excited to tell him how much I loved the album that I waved him over, and he got out and we started talking, and it turned out he lived just a ways up the same street I lived on. And I said, "Well, give me your phone number, and you'll have to come over and visit sometime." And he did.
The beginning of the Traveling Wilburys was as spontaneous, innocent, and uncalculated as any in rock and roll history, which is probably the only way it could ever have possibly happened. George Harrison needed either an extended version B-side of a single from Cloud Nine, or a new third song known as a C-side for the European single, and George was on deadline. Here's the late George Harrison with me in the studio.
If you don't have your extended version, then you gotta give him another song. So I didn't have an extended version or another song, so I just thought, well, the easiest thing is I'll just write a tune and do it tomorrow. Because it doesn't matter. It's not the A side. It's not even the B side. It's the C side. You know, it's just the third extra one. So I had dinner that night with Roy Orbison and Jeff. And I said to Jeff, look, tomorrow I'm just going to go in a studio and make up a tune and knock it out quick and do it for this thing. You know, do you want to come and help? He said, sure. He said, the problem's going to be, though, getting studio at this notice and an engineer. And I thought, well, after dinner, let's go to your house and make a few phone calls. And Roy just said, well, if you do anything tomorrow, you know, give me a call. I'd love to come by. And we went to Jeff's house, and we phoned. I said, what about Bill, this engineer, Bill Bottrell? And Jeff had worked with him before, and he said, now, Bill's so busy now, you know, he can never get hold of him. So I said, well, let me call him. I called him. He picked up the phone. And I said, what are you doing tomorrow, Bill? He said, fine. I'll come.
Wow.
And then Bob, we knew, had this little machine and little board in his garage. So I said, well, maybe we can just go there. I phoned Bob up, and he I mean, sometimes you can phone him and not get through for years, but he picked up first ring and he said, sure, come on over. I mean, it must have been...
Karma.
Yeah. And then I thought, well, I got to go and get my guitar to try and write this tune. And my guitar was at Tom Petty's house. So I went down there and I said, oh, I'm going to do this tune tomorrow. And he said, oh, great. I was wondering what I was going to do. I'll come along. So that's it. I just started the tune the next morning, got a few chords. Tom, Jeff picked me up. We went over to Bob's. We sat on his lawn and wrote the song, mused the music to it. Went in and put it down just with a machine and some acoustics, the five of us playing acoustics, as you know, might as well get them all playing. And then we went out there and wrote the words. And that was for my 12-inch. And I took it to the record company. They said, no, we, you know, it's too good to just put out as a seaside. That was Handle With Care.
Up and battered around, been sent up and I've been shut down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care. Reputation's changeable, situation's terrible.
Intended as a European-only C-side of the CD single, Handle With Care would later be a number one U.S. hit for the Traveling Wilburys. The late George Harrison recalls writing the lyrics on Bob Dylan's lawn with Bob, Tom Petty, and Jeff Lynne.
Well, we were sitting, after we were looking for the lyrics, right, I got the piece of paper and the pen and said, okay, come on, all you, you know, these brilliant songwriters, let's have some words. And there was Bob was saying, oh, what's it called? What's it about? You know, and I was thinking, you know, I was looking at his list, you know, saying the gates of freedom, you know, I was just trying to think of some title. And I finally, I saw behind his garage door this big box with a sticker on it saying Handle With Care. I said, Handle With Care. Oh, yeah, that sounds good.
Right,
and I went in the room where Jeff was, I said, Handle With Care. He said, oh, yeah, good. So then we went out in the garden. We were just having a barbecue, just sitting there. Just started. I got the first line. Just said, "Bean beat up, battered around," and then, wham! They just kept coming with all these lines. And then I thought, well, I'm not going to have Roy standing around and not sing on it. I said to Jeff, "I'm going to get Roy to sing." And he said, "No, you can't do that." And I said, "Why not? Why not? Might as well." And then, as it was taking shape, I thought, "Well, I'm going to get Bob and Tom and Jeff and get them all on this one." It was too good to miss, and so I sort of conned them into doing it.
Meanwhile, Tom Petty and Jeff Lynne had struck up a creative working relationship on Petty's first ever solo album in the spring of 1988, initially titled Songs from the Garage, but later switched to Full Moon Fever. Tom Petty played this solo album for me at his house in May 1988, and at that time he told me it was coming out in August. But when that date came and went with no Petty solo album, I was kind of perplexed.
I was going to release it, you know, because I had 9 songs at the time. And then I got involved in this other group, the Wilburys, right about the same time. We put it on hold for a number of reasons. One was the record companies weren't really pleased with both of them coming out at the same time. And the other was I was writing more songs. I just thought when the Wilburys got done, I'd go back in and finish these other 4 up and put them all together and put them out as I live with it and everything. And I kept most of the, I think most of the stuff I played you is still in there.
Did that thing just kind of seem to have a life of its own? And did
the Wilburys?
Was it your decision to, you know, I'm going to sit on this solo album for a while? Or
it was my decision, yeah. It was really because I thought I could make it better. That was at the root of it all. I mean, there were other little reasons like, well, you know, we could wait. It's going to be out at the same time as the Wilburys was not a real good thing.
It just would conflict.
Well, see, it was enough to go ask them, can I please be in this band? But to tell them that I'm also going to release my album at the same time was a little, I really didn't want to do that.
Up all night selling cocaine and hash to an undercover cop who had a sister named Jan. For reasons unexplained, she loved the Monkey Man. Tweeter was a Boy Scout before she went to Vietnam and found out the hard way nobody gives a damn. They knew that they'd find freedom just across the Jersey line, so they hopped into a stolen car, took Highway 99. The walls came down, all the way to hell. Never saw them when they standing, never saw them when they fell. The undercover cop never liked the Monkey Man. Even back in childhood he wanted to see him in the can. Jan got married at 14 to a racketeer named Bill. She made secret calls to the Monkey Man from a mansion on the hill. It was out on Thunder Road, Tweeter at the wheel. They crashed into paradise, they could hear them tires squeal. The undercover cop pulled up and said, every one of you's a liar. If you don't surrender now, it's gonna go down to the wire. And the walls came down, all the way to hell. Never saw them when they're standing, never saw them when they fell. An ambulance rolled up, a straight trooper close behind. Tweeter took his gun away and messed up his mind. The undercover cop was left tied up to a tree near the souvenir stand by the old abandoned factory. Next day the undercover cop was a hot in pursuit. He was taking the whole thing personal, he didn't care about the loot. Janet told him many times it was you to me who taught. In Jersey anything's legal as long as you don't get caught. And the walls came down, all the way to hell. Never saw them when they're standing, never saw them when they're standing.
said, "Huh, you didn't think that this could last." Jan jumped up out of bed, said, "There's someplace I gotta go." She took a gun out of the drawer and said, "It's best that you don't know." The undercover cop was found face down in a field. The monkey man was on the river bridge using Tweeter as a shield. Jan said to the monkey man, "I'm not fooled by Tweeter's curl. I knew him long before he ever became a Jersey girl."
And the walls came down, all the way to hell. Never saw them when they're standing, never saw them when they fell.
The town of Jersey City is quieting down again. I'm sitting in a gambling club called the Lion's Den. The TV set was blown up, every bit of it is gone. Ever since the nightly news show that the Monkey Man was on. I guess I'll go to Florida and get myself some sun. There ain't no more opportunity here, everything been done. Sometimes I think of Tweeter, sometimes I think of Jan. Sometimes I don't think about nothing but the Monkey Man.
When the walls came down, all the way to hell. Never saw them when they're standing, never saw them when they fell. And the walls came down, all the way to hell. Never saw them when
Bob Dylan doing a terrific narrative. That's the Traveling Wilburys with Tweeter and the Monkey Man from Volume 1. Follow In the Studio on Facebook at Redbeard Rock and online at inthestudio.net for our 30th anniversary. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with the late Tom Petty and the late George Harrison for the Traveling Wilburys Volume 1. Welcome back in the studio for the Traveling Wilburys Volume 1. I'm Redbeard. The late Tom Petty picks up the story of the formation of the Traveling Wilburys after they had all recorded Handle With Care for George Harrison's European single. Now, try to imagine being stopped at a red light and looking over in the car next to you and seeing four guys all wearing sunglasses at night.
George and Jeff came over to my house. I think it was like a Saturday afternoon or something, and they said they were all bubbling and happy, and they said, "Hey, the record company thinks that this is way too good to go on the back of a single." And we were thinking, why don't we form a group and make an album? And I said, yeah, that sounds like a real good idea, because it had really been such magic doing the first track. It was such fun. So we all got in a car. Roy was playing out in Anaheim that night. We called Bob on the phone, and Bob said he was in. And so the last thing to do is to ask Roy, and so we got in a car, all of us packed in this car into Anaheim, it's about an hour and a half, I guess, from Hollywood, and we went in there, and we all rushed into Roy's room, and he said, "Hey, Roy, you want to be in our band, you know?" And he had that laugh, you know, that kind of, and he said, "Yeah, well, that'd be great. You know, that'd be great. I'd like to be in the band." And so we went home just really excited, saying, "God, you know." And every time we'd start thinking about it, it'd just be like, "Wow, and Roy Orbison's in the band, you know." That was just be, oh, man, it's going to be scary.
I wandered around with nothing more than time on my hand. Close to the edge, hanging by my fingers.
Vocal on the verses by Nelson Wilberry, better known as George Harrison, that's Heading for the Light. Now, you'd think that a band comprised of probably our generation's most important songwriter, Bob Dylan, a former Beatle, George Harrison, possibly the greatest male singer ever, Roy Orbison, a 70s hitmaker, ELO's Jeff Lynne, and everybody's All-American, Tom Petty. Now, that band we'd know about, right? The fact is, up until just a few weeks before its October 25th, 1988 release, the Traveling Wilburys were on a strictly need-to-know basis. George Harrison told me why.
Well, first of all, you can blow a good thing, or the press, or somebody can. You know, all you need is somebody to say, we know about this thing that's happening, and it just takes the wind out of it. Secondly, Bob was on CBS Records, and Roy was on Virgin Records, and Tom was on MCA, and... You know, I'm so dumb, I just don't even think about that. You know, there was a point, though, where I thought, hey, I don't want to get caught at the end of this album and find that all the record companies decide to get, you know, a bit tough about letting their artists all get on the same record. So we had to keep it quiet for that, because I had to try and clear the way first. And so I went to see MCA and talked to them, you know, I said, look, I was thinking of doing something with, you know, a few friends, more like a group thing. And I know Tom Petty's on your label, but, you know, would that be any trouble if he was on the record? Because if it is, you know, I'll just maybe use somebody else. I went with that kind of attitude. And they said, no, we're artist-oriented label. And, you know, fine. And I asked Bob to do the same, you know, talk to Columbia. And, you know, they were all pretty... I mean, they tried playing a few games when the record was finished, but, you know, everything got resolved pretty easily. And I think it was good for everybody, you see. That's the thing. It set up everybody. Set up Roy, it set up Tom and Bob for, you know, their albums. It just, you know, there was definitely no damaging element in, you know, for all the other record labels.
There at the bar, she heard my guitar. She was long and tall, she was the queen of them all. Last night, thinking about last night. Last night, thinking about last night. Dark and discreet, she was light on her feet. We went up to her room, and she lowered the boom.
Last night, talking spot. She went a little too far. She done me wrong. All I got is a song.
Charlie T. Wilbury Jr. on lead vocal, better known as Tom Petty, and Lefty Wilbury, the great Roy Orbison on the bridges. That's the song Last Night from the Traveling Wilburys. Up next, Tom Petty gives a special tribute to the late Roy Orbison, and I'll do the same for him and George Harrison. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the Traveling Wilburys Volume 1. Welcome back in the studio for the Traveling Wilburys. I'm Redbeard. Now, at this point, the saga of the Traveling Wilburys gets kind of complicated, so if you need to take notes, I understand. In the spring of 88, Tom Petty was working on his first solo album with Jeff Lynne producing. At the same time, Jeff Lynne was producing Roy Orbison's Mystery Girl album in the same garage studio. And even one track on a Randy Newman album. Now, you got that? Okay, good, because it gets even more confusing. To sort it out, here's the late Tom Petty with me in the studio.
The Wilburys, it was all precipitated by George's needing to cut that track that night. And I think George and Jeff had, for a long time during the Cloud Nine album, it had been kind of a private joke with them, the Traveling Wilburys, that one day they'd have a group called the Traveling Wilburys. George would come to town every so often, and he'd come over there too. And so it was, just became a group of people. We didn't really, sometimes it was hard to tell what record we were working on.
Exactly.
Because
we
were making so many, but it was just something that you don't question. It was just rolling along so well that you don't question it. You just go with it because it was all coming out real good. So that's when the Wilburys kind of kicked into gear. Was right around that period.
I asked the late George Harrison why they titled their October 1988 release Traveling Wilburys Volume 1.
Well, maybe a little teaser for not just the public, but for us too, you know. You know, the idea of, well, maybe, you know, if things work out right and everybody's still friends and enjoyed the thing. That's, from my point of view, I just tried to preserve our relationship. It was the same with the Concert for Bangladesh. I worked so hard to make sure that, you know, all the guys who were in that band and consequently on record and film and stuff, that, you know, that it wasn't, the friendship wasn't abused. And it was like that with the Wilburys. I was just so sensitive to anything that could make anybody feel, you know, that they got screwed or they got used, or, you know, just to preserve our friendship. That was the underlying contribution, I think, what I was trying to do, and then get the record made so it was just a little bit of, you know, rock and roll magic or history or whatever you want to call it.
Watching the documentary on the DVD with the home movies of the five superstars making this first Traveling Wilburys album in a home environment, it's such a joy, which was captured in the music. The listeners responded by making Handle With Care a number one song in America and the album a number three seller in the U.S. It was a blessing, as it turns out, because time indeed was running out on the Traveling Wilburys.
He was what made the Wilburys, really, and what made it such an unusual, special thing. And then it was just our ace in the hole to have that voice come in, you know, even if he just went, wah, you know, or whatever. It was just like, come on, Roy, you got to do the growl, man, you know. Oh, you don't want me to growl. Don't you? Yeah, 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 please do the growl. And he goes, yeah, he did the growl. Yeah, come on, do it again, Roy, come on, you know. It was like that. Come on, you know, come on, Roy, do it again, you know. It was just like, and he was so nice, you know, and it was so painful when he died. Just, you know, I think it just knocked the wind right out of all of the Wilburys. So the Wilburys just, from then on, went, you know, it's just been on hold, really. I don't know. We'd made a lot of plans and stuff, but I think when that happened, we all felt that Roy was a real special part of the group. And, you know, so it was, we did make a video after that. We had to make a video just days after Roy's funeral. And it wasn't the same feeling, really, when we did it. But he was that special to the group that it's definitely made us all step back and have to think things over about the Wilburys, because it's just one of those things, you know.
Late Roy Orbison of the Traveling Wilburys with You're Not Alone Anymore from Volume 1. There has never been a voice like that in rock, probably never will be again. Here's Tom Petty.
Well, that was a real privilege to know Roy. It was a privilege, really, to know him on a lot of levels. It was a privilege. I mean, he was such a wonderful fella that if he had never sung a note, I would have felt the same way, you know. I really would, because he was just such a gentle, sweet man, you know. He had so much love in him, and he really seemed so full of life all the time. If I learned anything from Roy, it was probably to just really appreciate every minute you're here. or the joke's on you. And I think Roy really did that. And it's been kind of my way of coping with his death, I guess, is just feeling that I'm sure he was prepared for that. Because he really did, you know, have so much fun. He was always, he's portrayed as being this sort of lonely, dark figure, but he wasn't at all that to me. I never saw him like that. He was always laughing and joking and just, he had this great laugh, you know, that was this beautiful laugh that was so infectious when you heard it. And he had a beautiful speaking voice, really. When he'd call on the phone or something, I remember just thinking, you know, don't wonder he sings so good. I could just listen to Roy talk.
And George Harrison of the Traveling Wilburys.
I'm like a fan, really. I'm saying that's why Jeff just idolized Roy. I mean, he was his greatest singer that Jeff ever liked. And Jeff was just so blissed out, you know, being able to produce Roy. And then the idea of being in the group with Roy. And, you know, and me, I loved Roy. I've worked with him back in the 60s and, you know, loved all his records and his singing. And I'm, you know, just so into Bob, too. You know, I just loved so much of Bob's songs and his whole attitude. You know, that I was looking at it from, like, out of the Wilburys. I was looking at it like, wow, look at all these people together. This would be great.
Since I was so blessed to get these interviews, the man who was the catalyst for all things Wilbury, who had the clout for the motto, where there's a Wilbury, there's a way, who had the sense of humor and kept love and friendship ahead of business and commerce, George Harrison. George passed away in 2001 after a long illness with lung cancer. Tom Petty pays tribute to all things Wilbury.
And the greatest payoff ever for me was meeting all these great musicians and people that I admired and being able to work with them. That's just unbelievable, you know. You can't ever describe that. Or it's not a dream come true, because it's not the kind of thing you would dream. It's just so great, you know, and such a wonderful kind of a payoff to me or something. It's nothing that I ever even tried to do either. Is what's funny is that they're all people that I just met over the years, you know, as a fan, really, you know, and then wound up playing with them. I don't talk about it much. I don't really think about it much, because they're in my life so much that they become your friends. And that, I think, does take priority over everything else with those guys. I like them so much. I'm just glad to have them in my life, because they really, I think a lot of all the positive things that have gone on to me has been because I've had the support of such good friends.
Well, it's all right.
Phone to ring, waiting for someone to tell you everything. Sit around and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe a diamond ring.
Well, it's all right, even if they say you're wrong. Well, it's all right. Sometimes you gotta be strong. Well, it's all right.
Somewhere down the road away,
at the end of the line,
you'll think of me and wonder where I am these days.
At the end of the line, of the line.
Maybe somewhere down the road when somebody plays,
at the end of the line,
the purple haze.
Well, it's all right, even when push comes to shove. Well, it's all right.
All right,
we're going to the
ashamed of the car I drive.
The end of the line.
I'm just glad to be here, happy to feel that.
At the end of the line, of the line.
And it don't matter if you're by my side.
At the end of the line,
I'm satisfied.
Well, it's all right. Even if you're old and gray, well, it's all right. You still got something to say.
Well, it's all right.
Remember to live and let live. Well, it's all right. Best you can do is forgive. Well, it's all right. Riding around on the breeze. Well, it's all right. If you live the life you please. Well, it's all right. Even if the sun don't shine. Well, it's all right. We're going to the end of the line.
And now, with the passing of Tom Petty, that brings us to the end of the line for the true life fairy tale of the Traveling Wilburys. This episode of In the Studio is dedicated to the late Roy Orbison, the late George Harrison, and to Tom Petty, who is now passed. We shall never see their likes again. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio. God bless the soul of George Harrison, and God bless the eternal soul of Tom Petty. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Follow In the Studio on Facebook at Redbeard Rocks, on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.